Number of weeks ago, when we were dealing with the rapture of the church in Revelation chapter 4, I affirmed my steadfast belief that the rapture is imminent. It can happen at any moment. There is nothing that needs to be fulfilled biblically in order for the rapture to take place. In fact, best as I can understand, the apostles themselves were looking for the rapture to occur in their day and age. And if it was possible 2,000 years ago, how much more so even today? Having said that, though, there are some interesting things to consider. There are a number of things that will transpire during the tribulation period that seems to me the stage is not quite yet set. Or is it? In that the tribulation period falls right on the heels of the rapture of the church. And I do believe there's a short amount of time in between the two, maybe a month or two. It would seem, though, that the things necessary to take place during the tribulation would have to be almost in place before the tribulation starts, possibly even before the church is raptured. This morning, I want to take a look at some of those things and suggest to you that those things that may not necessarily seem possible really are possible. Three problems that I wanted to address concerning the fulfillment of prophecy in the tribulation. And the first one of these problems is the problem of the absence of the United States in biblical prophecy. Without question, the United States of America is the foremost superpower in the world today, both militarily and economically. There's just no question about it. We have been called the world's policeman, and I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing to be called. Generally speaking, a policeman is a good person. And to be involved in policing the world in righteousness, I think, is a good thing. Now, certainly it is a tedious thing. Certainly it is a dangerous thing. But militarily, we control a lot of what's going on in the world today. And economically, we control a lot of what's going on in the world today. The question is, where is the United States in biblical prophecy? It's not there. About the only possible reference is where the scripture refers to the young lions of Tarshish, and that is a debatable issue of whether that refers to the United States or not. Fact of the matter is, when prophecy events take place, the center of political, military, and economic operations is found in a revived Roman Empire. Where is the United States? You may be surprised to learn that the United States is highly vulnerable to an attack. It's a good thing Christian showed up here today. We got Sean over here and Christian over here. We're well represented militarily. If anything happens, I trust you guys are going to defend us, right? But don't worry, the attack that I'm speaking of is not coming with rifles and bombs. It's a cyber attack. Richard L. Clark, who is the former anti-terrorism czar to Presidents Clinton and Bush, warns that great damage could be inflicted on America in a mere 15 minutes. In his book, Cyber War, The Next National Security Threat and What to Do About It, he warns of a possible electronic Pearl Harbor, the likes of which we've never experienced before. Now, this is a scenario that he puts out, but he said all these things are possible. The unclassified Department of Defense network known as NIPRNET collapses with heavy-duty routers throughout the network, failing and constantly rebooting. The Department of Defense classified networks grind to a halt. Computer networks at the Pentagon collapse. Internet service providers go down in a meltdown. Meltdowns also take place at major financial computer centers in New York, terabytes of financial data are wiped clean so that no one knows who owns what. The computer systems at the Federal Aviation Administration's National Air Traffic Control Center in Herndon, Virginia, collapse. Computer systems at alternate air traffic control centers go down so that it cannot see what aircraft are aloft. Multiple airline mid-air collisions ensue. Infrastructure attacks cause large refinery fires and explosions in various cities. Chemical plants malfunction with lethal clouds of chlorine gas spewing into the air. Major gas pipelines explode in various suburbs. Subway trains crash in multiple cities. Traffic lights go out all over the country, resulting in thousands of casualties due to collisions. Freight trains derail across the country. Blackouts occur in major cities due to power grid failures. Communication, weather, and navigation satellites deviate from their orbits, completely disrupting service. Food and medical supplies are depleted at local stores due to the disruption in transportation. Communication breaks down on many different levels, including between different sectors of our government and military. And how does this all take place? Via the internet. Clark soberly warns that in all wars America has participated in, no one nation has ever done this kind of damage to cities in the United States. A sophisticated cyber war attack by one of several nation states could do that today in 15 minutes without a single terrorist or soldier ever appearing in our country. 15 minutes. A cyber attack through the internet could take us down. Jim, and I'm not sure how his last name is pronounced, SETE, I think it is, S-E-T-D-E, who is the retired director of the FBI's Computer Crime Squad, once commented, "You bring me a select group of hackers within 90 days, I'll bring this country to its knees." Today's Middle Eastern terrorist organizations have the financial backing of oil-rich countries who would be willing to subsidize the payment of internet hackers. Today, terrorists can engage in cyber attacks while sitting in the comfort of their own living rooms. Cyberspace undoubtedly gives a sense of empowerment to terrorists that they have never yet enjoyed because they can accomplish these attacks throughout the world without ever leaving their own country. All you have to have is a computer that's hooked to the internet, and you can go around the world. In fact, many jihadist Islamic terrorists consider cyberspace as a legitimate means of fulfilling a jihad against the United States and Israel. Well, how do they pull this thing off? Well, it's through a means of a thing called malware. Malware is a short name for malicious software that causes computers and networks to do things that their owners don't necessarily want them to do. All you have to do is somehow get this malware onto another's computer, and you can control that other person's computer from a distance. And there's a number of ways that this can happen. For example, if you're sitting at home and you're surfing the internet, you might click on a website, and without even knowing it, you're downloading this malware onto your computer. You have no idea that it's even happening. Specifically, one of the major areas in which this is done is through pornographic websites. A young person will get on, especially males, will get on to look at pornography, and they'll see this thing for a video. And, well, I want to see this video, and you click on the video, and a little pop-up screen will come up that says, "Your computer needs to be updated. The Windows Media Player needs to be updated. Click on this update, and then you can watch the video." Well, of course I'm going to do that. Click. And you start watching the video, and the whole time that you're doing this, you're importing this malware, this behind-the-scenes thing. Or you might see a banner on a very innocent website, such as an advertisement for something else. Those of you who have Facebook and that type of thing, oftentimes you will see on the sides advertisements for various websites. And most of those advertisements are legitimate advertisements. But every once in a while, a hacker will slip something in there that will download malware onto your computer. Malware presents no small problem, as the book Cyber Power and National Security makes very clear. And I quote, during the first half of 2006, the Microsoft security team reported that it removed 10 million pieces of malicious software from nearly 4 million computers and web servers. When analysts at Google examined several million web pages for the presence of malicious software, they determined that 4.5 million of the web pages examined were suspicious in nature. After further testing of those pages, over 1 million were found to launch downloads of malicious software, and more than two-thirds of those programs were hot software that, among other things, collected data on banking transactions which it emailed to a temporary and thus hard-to-trace email account. People can actually hire malware services to do their dirty work. If you want to attack my computer, you can go out and pay a malware expert, and they can probably get into my computer at home, and you can do all kinds of nasty stuff. Now, I know who you are. In fact, it only takes a couple $100 a month, and you can hire a team of malware experts, and that's what these foreign countries can do. Now, what can they do? What kind of malware is out there? Well, the most common thing is a computer virus. A virus is a software program that goes from one computer to another, can wipe it out completely. It gets in there and it just destroys everything that's there. It also can provide access to hackers to your system so they can steal information off of your computer. Spyware is like that. Spyware is installed on your computer without your knowing it. It typically finds its way onto your computer when a user clicks on a link or an email. Be careful the emails that you get. Some of those attachments that are on emails have what's known as a keystroke logger associated with them. And what this does is it's a program that gets in and it monitors the keys that you type. And consequently, when you go to a website such as your bank or something there that you have a password and a user ID that you need to insert, it's monitoring what you type in. For example, if I went to my bank website and it asked me for my user ID and I put in Pastor Paul. Now, let me tell you, Pastor Paul is not my user ID, so if you have any bright ideas of saying I'm going to rob him of all his money, that's not going to work. But if Pastor Paul was my user ID, this would copy down those letters, send it to the hacker, and the hacker now has access to my user ID and password. And all he has to do is go in, sign in as me, and he has access to whatever he wants. Phishing scams, and that's not with an F, but with a PH, are emails that you will receive, presumably from a bank or financial institution, but they're not. It looks real, but it's not real. And what it's going to say is something to the effect of, someone's been trying to get into your account, we suspect suspicious activity, log on and make sure that the transactions are correct. Well, you type in your name, username and ID, and you think you're going to your bank's account or whatever it is, you're going to that person's web page. They just recorded your user ID and your password. Now they go to the real thing, and there you go. Logic bombs. A logic bomb is a piece of software application that erases everything on your computer. Gets in there, poof, everything's gone. Can shut the system down or disrupt the system from working. What could be really damaging is if a computer hacker gets into the electrical grid. Can you imagine what would happen if our electricity was sabotaged, that it went off across the nation? Lynn's sitting there. She's fanning herself. Every one of you would be sitting here this morning fanning yourself, because these fans wouldn't be running, neither would the AC be running. Oh, well, that's not too bad. We could learn to live with that. Oh, the lights wouldn't be on. The amplification system wouldn't be working. I could be rambling for hours because the clocks wouldn't be running. That doesn't make any difference anyway. It was interesting this morning as I was going over this message and I was dealing with this issue. Right after I got to this, we had a momentary power interruption. I thought, Lord, you're really getting me in the mood to preach this thing, aren't you? But what was interesting about that was one page of my notes hadn't printed out. And with the power shut down, it was gone. Took me a half an hour's worth of work to recover that one page. We depend upon electricity very much. Trap doors. A trap door is simply an ability to get into your computer. Doesn't necessarily do anything immediately, but allows the person to get back in with ease later on. And it's suspected that there are trap doors infested in many of the nation's computers that control significant things that are just waiting for the hackers to attack. And then there's a thing called a botnet. A botnet is short for robotic networks. And what this does is this gets onto your computer and it gets onto a whole lot of computers. A signal is given to all these different botnets to access a certain website at a particular time. If this thing infects, say, 10,000 computers, all of a sudden you have 10,000 computers hitting a network at the same time, overloads the system, shuts it down, which could be done to our electrical grids and so forth. Well, you say, that can't happen to me. I've got antivirus software installed on my computer, which is a good thing. But not good enough. The sheer prevalence and pervasiveness of constantly new malware in cyberspace creates a huge challenge for the software or the antivirus developers. Here's the thing. A hacker creates a new virus. That virus is out on the internet before the antivirus people know it exists. It has to show up on somebody's computer before they know it exists. Well, once it shows up on a computer, then they can start writing the antivirus programs to take care of it. But in that time that's intervening there, this virus is going all over the place. And your computer is unprotected. Well, you say, okay, that may be, but how many new viruses are there? Well, malware enters cyberspace at the rate of once every 2.2 weeks, seconds. There is a new virus or some type of malware out there every 2.25 seconds. How in the world can the antivirus people keep up with that? The fact is, they can't. What only makes things worse is the antivirus programs that are in existence. Guess who has them? The hackers. So what they have done, the hackers do, is they write a program that disables your antivirus program, renders your computer helpless. We are vulnerable. The head of the Pentagon's U.S. Cyber Command, General Keith Alexander, said that it is only a matter of time before America is attacked. And since there is no overnight fix for such troublesome cyber attacks, they could have long-lasting consequences for the American way of life. One analyst put it this way. The U.S. nuclear monopoly at the end of World War II allowed it to defeat Imperial Japan and bring the war to an end in an Allied victory. Once the U.S. exposed its nuclear arsenal, however, the Soviet Union's race to acquire nuclear weapons of its own began. Just 4 years after the United States used its nuclear weapons, it found itself in a nuclear arms race with the Soviets. America's possession of nuclear weapons did not shield it from the threat of their destructive power. The risks of proliferation are the flip side to the advantage of developing a new technology. And in the same way, so we are at the risk with a cyber attack. In the book Cyber Power and National Security, we are warned that kinds of lethal cyber attacks that have afflicted and even crippled other countries could likewise afflict the United States in the very near future. The CIA in particular has warned of the threat of a cyber attack against our nation's electrical utilities, noting that a cyber attack, cyber attackers have hacked into the computer systems using utility companies outside the United States and have made demands such as an extortionist. And if the people, they're asking for a ransom. And if the country did not come up with the ransom, they turn the power off. And that could happen to us. No nation depends on cyber systems and networks for the operations of its infrastructure as much as the United States. Scott Borg, who is the director and chief economist of the nonprofit U.S. Cyber Consequences Unit, warns that such cyber attacks can render horrendous damage. A large number of electricity generators could have a lasting effect with little U.S. capability to support new paths for damaged generators. Do you know if a generator went down, we'd have to get parts for it or a new generator? Do you know where most of the generators are manufactured? China. Guess what country is most likely to generate a cyber attack on our power system? China. Do you think the country that's generating the attack is going to send us a part to fix the attack? I don't think so. Experience a prolonged outage of electricity would definitely not be pleasant for the millions of people thrown into the dark and perhaps the cold, unable to get food, without access to cash, and dealing with social disorder. It would be in many ways the same as if bombs had been dropped on their cities for months and would have a similar level of damage to our economy as a nuclear attack would. Deputy U.S. Defense Secretary William Lynn notes that any major future conflict inevitably will involve cyber warfare that could knock out power, transport, and banks and causing massive economic disruption. It is almost impossible to measure how long a full recovery for such attack would take. I'll bet you it would take at least 3.5 years. You know why? Because then the Antichrist would be in full control. Where is the United States? In 15 minutes, we could be rendered powerless. The absence of the United States as a world power is not a problem at all. Well, here's another problem. In Revelation chapter 12, we read that the devil is going to persecute the people of Israel. I don't want you to turn there, but I would like you to turn to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25, beginning at verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then shall He sit upon the throne of His glory. Before Him shall be gathered all nations, and He shall separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And He shall set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the King say unto them on His right hand, Come, ye blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was a hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? And when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. That my brethren there, I believe, refers to Jewish believers in the time of the tribulation. And here these Jewish believers are going to be persecuted. In order to persecute somebody, you have to know where they are and who they are. If you don't know who it is that you're fighting, you can't fight them. If you know who they are, but you don't know where they are, you can't fight them. So in order to persecute, the Antichrist is going to have to know who is it exactly that is the ones he wants to persecute, Jewish believers, and where are they? How do you keep track of people? We can do it through a thing called biometrics. Biometric technology is already used in a variety of contexts around the world. For example, some laptops and personal computers have fingerprint scanners that allow only the user to use the computer. I was at the Rite Aid just the other day, and person before me had to exchange something, or I don't know exactly what was going on, but the pharmacy manager had to verify that this transaction was a legitimate transaction. She came over, and I heard the attendant say to the manager, she said, I need your thumb. And I thought, what in the world's that about? Well, he came over and he put his thumb on a little scanner, and that little scanner read his fingerprint. And said, oh, that's the pharmacy manager. This must be good. It's already in use today. So it can identify who we are. In the United Kingdom, some students pay for their meals with a thumbprint. They simply put their thumb on a scanner, and funds are withdrawn from an account already set up by the student's parents. Well, that's convenient, isn't it? Interesting, though, the parents also receive nutrition reports of the food that the students have purchased. Now, that's kind of funny, but it's also very intrusive. Australia uses biometrics in connection with visas and passports. Canadians use it in border security and immigration purposes. Israelis use it in connections with a new high-tech ID card. Dutch use it in connection with passports and IDs. Finger imaging is presently being used in different parts of the world to provide identification, verification at ATM machines. You lose your Mac card, someone steals it, no problem. They need that fingerprint. Well, that's a good thing, but it's tracking who's out there. Two primary applications of biometrics are identification and verification. Identification involves a one-to-many comparison. For example, FBI, typical thing, a crime's been committed. Oh, look, here's a fingerprint. Well, whose fingerprint is it? Well, we don't know, but we run it through a large database of fingerprints, and we're able to match it to somebody. Verification is a one-to-one thing. I'm Paul Reiner. Well, prove it. Well, here's my thumbprint. That proves that it's me. It's not just thumbprints or fingerprints. There are a variety of biometrical things. There is the infrared thermogram. Technology measures the pattern of heat radiated in some part of the human body. You're all giving off heat right now. And you know you have a unique heat pattern associated with you. And we can measure that. Do you realize that everybody has a unique style of walking? and how you walk can be measured. Do you realize how you type on a keyboard is unique? For me, it's I never really learned to type. I use 6 fingers. These 2 for the letters and these 2 for the space bar. And that's how I type. And it's letter, letter, backspace, backspace, letter, 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 backspace, backspace, because I can't type very well. But there's a pattern to it that can be measured. Do you realize your ear is just as unique as your thumbprint? Everybody has a unique ear pattern. Your face, facial recognition. They can pick you out of a crowd. If they see somebody in a crowd and they say, oh, that guy looks suspicious, they take the picture and they match it to facial recognition. Retinal scanners. You look into the thing and it measures your retina. You have a unique retina. Your voice. How you sign a signature. And, of course, DNA. All these things can identify who you are and verify. And consequently, in tribulation times, you'll have some method of recognizing people in a crowd. And the Antichrist can use that. Oh, there's one of those Jews. Let's get after them. Another thing is what's called an RFID, a radio frequency ID chip. It's a little transmitter. Oftentimes it's implanted under the skin, and it sets out a radio signal that identifies you. It may identify where you are. It may identify who you are. It can contain all kinds of information, medical information, economic information, where you are and so forth, and many of you have one of them, or more. How many have an easy pass for the turnpike? You have an RFID. When you go through the easy pass, that's sending out a radio signal that just says, you passed through this thing, and it takes care of your account, and it's sold to you, and reasonably so, as a convenience item. Well, guess what? Government knows exactly where you're traveling. Not only that, you better be careful. Because they can also say, okay, you got on the turnpike at such and such an exit, and you got off the turnpike at another one. We know the distance in between is X number of miles. And obeying the speed limit, you can only get from point A to point B in a minimal amount of time of whatever it is. And if you get there earlier than that, you're speeding. And the government knows it. Some businesses monitor their employees by requiring them to carry a company ID card. Well, it's just, you know, one of those things, and you have that strap and this little plastic card. Oh, no, wait a minute. On that card is a little RFID chip that tells you, or tells the company, exactly where you have been, how much time you spent in such and such a place. And if you go in the back room to goof off, your employer knows it. And you can't get away with anything. I just got an email just last week from my Visa card saying that someone tried to use my Visa card to enter a movie theater that has a Spanish name associated with it. Now, I don't know exactly where this movie theater was, but it wasn't in this area of Western Pennsylvania. And my credit card company fortunately said, you know what, that doesn't look right, and they denied the use of the thing, sent me an email and said, was this you? No, it wasn't me. They said, we're sending you a new card. We've taken that card. We're no longer using that card. No one can use that card anymore. Oh, and by the way, your new card will have a chip on it that makes it less vulnerable to attacks. Right now, my Visa card is telling the world exactly where I'm standing. Anyone have a GPS? Tells you how to get from one place to another. Do you know how those things work? There is a network of 24 satellites orbiting the Earth around 12,000 miles up. They make an orbit of the Earth twice a day. Solar powered, so you don't have to worry about them running out of batteries or anything like that. And they have rockets on them that they can adjust their orbits. They were put into orbit by the U.S. Department of Defense. And they are there initially for defense purposes, but our industry has said, well, we can utilize this technology. Consequently, they are sending signals to the ground, and the ground is sending signals to these satellites. And when you triangulate these things, the GPS system, if you can get it on at least three of these satellites, they can tell your latitude, your longitude, and your altitude. Consequently, they know exactly where you are at all times. You try and take off, that little GPS system is sending a signal exactly where you are. That the Antichrist could use this to persecute Israel is not a problem at all. He will be able to know exactly who is where at all times of the day. One last problem is the problem of buying and selling. Two weeks ago, we were looking at the mark of the beast, and without the mark of the beast, no man can buy or sell. Well, that mark is not necessarily anything that is technological in and of itself. It could just be a tattoo that identifies you. But along with that mark could be some type of technology that will allow you to buy or sell. Now, in order to buy or sell, there's going to have to be some way of controlling the means of buying and selling. If I were to reach into my wallet and say to Stacy here, you know, you've got something I want. Here's $2. I got to think of something I want. There's nothing that would keep me other than my frugality of giving her $2. There's no way you can stop that. Unless there's no cash. If we go to a cashless society, money means nothing. If everything is done electronically, now we can control that. Joe Kurtzman, who is the executive editor of Harvard Business Review, wrote these words: "Few people realize that money in the traditional sense has met its demise. Fewer still have paused to reflect on the implications of that fact. Money is no longer a thing, an object you can dig up at the beach or search for behind the cushions of a sofa. It is a system. Money is a network that comprises hundreds of thousands of computers of every type, wired together in places as lofty as the Federal Reserve, which settles accounts between banks every night that are worth trillions of dollars. And as mundane as thousands of gas pumps around the world outfitted to take credit and debit cards. Economists tell us that the amount of real cash in circulation continues year by year to grow less and less. In fact, the amount of cash being used today is about half that of the 1970s. More and more people are using cashless options such as credit and debit cards, or paying electronically over the internet. 70% of all consumer payments are now electronic. Robert Samuelson, an economic columnist for the Washington Post, says this: "The long-predicted cashless society has quietly arrived, or nearly so. Electronic money is cheaper than cash or checks, and it is more convenient." There are a lot of advantages of being cashless. Just the simple ease of it. Most places anymore accept credit and debit cards. In fact, fewer and fewer places are starting to accept cash. They don't want it. It involves, oftentimes, loss. My father, when he had his restaurant business, when we first opened up in 1972, we had a cash register that you could calculate the amount of the sale on, but you had to figure out how much change to give a person. Our high school students had trouble with that. As technology increased, we finally got a cash register that said, okay, your bill is $5.45 and you gave a 10, you can get $4.55 in change, and they could figure that one out, but they couldn't figure it out by themselves. Well, if you go cashless, you don't have to figure out anything. It eliminates the possibility of counterfeit. At present, more than $100 million of counterfeit money is removed from circulation every year. Go cashless, no counterfeit. Cash that has been circulating, who knows where, carries with it germs. It's the dirtiest thing that's out there. Get rid of the cash, you get rid of germs. You lose your wallet or your purse, you've lost your cash. Cashless, you don't lose anything. You go to a vending machine, you wave your credit card, thing comes out. You don't have the right change, it doesn't matter. I shouldn't say change anymore. What vending machine has change? Joe Kurtzman, in his book, The Death of Money, says the new electronic form of money is a game changer. For the last 20 years or so, the world and its economy has been in the midst of a wrenching change. What has changed? Money? No. Not the dollars in our pockets or the coins in our hands. That money, tangible money, old-fashioned money, and now accounts for only the tiniest fraction of all money that is in circulation in the world today. We are becoming cashless. Well, how are we going to pay for things? With a credit card that has that ID chip in it that if you don't have the mark of the beast, you can't use. It's as simple as that. Some of you, maybe, pay for things with your cell phone. Anyone here pay for things, have an app on their cell phone that you just wave it and things get paid for? That's that ID chip that works. Now, one of the benefits of that ID chip is really, really a good thing. You know when you go to a store and you purchase something of value and it has that little thing on the inside that they have to run over the scanner or whatever it is to deactivate it so that when you walk out the store it doesn't beep, 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 you just stole something. That's an RFID chip that they're deactivating. Plans are to put those things in every item in a store that has information on what that item is and how much it costs. And rather than deactivating them, when you go out the door, it automatically reads what you have purchased, and you don't have to check out anymore. Wouldn't that be nice? You go to the grocery store, you go to Walmart or anything, you just put the stuff in your cart, you wheel the cart out through the door, you never stop at the checkout lane. Man, what time that's going to save. And guess who's going to know what you just purchased? In detail. Oh, but you say it'll take a massive computer to keep all that in track. Well, guess what? IBM has developed a supercomputer called the Sequoia that can do 20,000 trillion calculations per second. Now, to put that into perspective, if you had billions of people on the earth all using electronic calculators to work together on one massive calculation, and they were all working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, they would take more than 300 years to do what the Sequoia computer does in 1 hour. Consequently, that can control everything that's going on in the world today. The problem of buying and selling is not a problem at all. everything technologically is already in practice today, that tribulation things could be fulfilled very easily. Couple of problems, though, associated with this. First of all, the problem of predicting these things. Back in 1966, a new program came on television. It was a sci-fi program called Star Trek. It's a five-year mission to explore galaxies and so forth. Do you know when Star Trek was taking place? What time frame? 23rd century. 2200s. 100 years from now. If you are an old Star Trek fan, like myself, look at the electronics, the technological things. A communicator. You know, it opens that thing up, flips the thing open. Where have I seen something that flips open that you can talk to another person? Called a cell phone. Medical data was on a little plastic thing about yay big, and they stuck it into a computer. We've long since gone past a 3.5-inch floppy disk or diskette. The computers on the Star Trek spaceship, the Enterprise, had a very mechanical-sounding voice. We have almost real people talking to us anymore. That was supposed to be 100 years from now. We've surpassed what they thought technology would take. Who knows when the rapture will take place? Who knows then what technology will be in place? To say that these are the things that the Antichrist will use and fulfill, I can't do that. All I can, though, say is that it's possible now. Well, how do you protect yourself? I mean, this, you could go home, and I hope you don't go home today saying, what am I going to do? Now, I'm going to throw my cell phone out the window. I'm going to get rid of my GPS. I'm going to, you know, tear up all my credit cards. Well, don't do that, because if we go cashless, you're going to be broke. How can we protect ourselves? Proverbs 14:34 says, righteousness exalts a nation. I think you should have good, if you have a computer and you get on the internet, you should have a good antivirus program. That can't do it, but God can. Our greatest problem nationally is not the technological inabilities, but our immoral abilities. And it very well could be that because of the immorality that is rampant in our society today, that God will judge. But we can do something about that. We can share Christ with people. Maybe just, even if it's only a little, turn that around. Well, what about personally, though? I mean, all these things are coming to pass in the tribulation. How can I personally deal with that? In the movie Karate Kid Number 2, great spiritual analogy here. Daniel-san was standing out here on a wharf, and there was this big hook that came flying down. Mr. Miyagi said, best defense, don't be there when it comes. Best defense against tribulation, don't be there when it comes. And if you know the Lord Jesus Christ as Savior, you won't be. That's how you defend yourself. The church is going to be raptured before any of this stuff ever comes to take place. Will you be gone with it? Works for me. How about you? Let's pray. Father, a lot of stuff here this morning. Maybe interesting, maybe not. Maybe terrifying, maybe exciting. Some of it may happen in the near future, if it's not already happening today. Some of the stuff of tribulation times may be a millennium away. We know not time frames, but we do know this with certainty. Jesus Christ is coming again. And I pray, Father, that each and every one that is here this morning might be certain of their eternal destiny. That the horrors of tribulation times need not concern them. For the best defense is to be not there when it comes. Lord, may they know that on Calvary's cross, Jesus died for their sins, paid sin's penalty in full with his blood. And that simple faith in that shed blood of Calvary's cross will wash away those sins and provide righteousness that lasts for eternity, that makes us acceptable in the sight of a holy God. Lord, as we see this world rushing towards tribulation times, may we be found faithful in sharing Christ with it. Lord, use us for your glory, I pray today in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.